Ideas matter. Ideas matter. This is Dialogue.
Hello and welcome to this special edition of Global Thinkers, charting the course Sino-French relations at 60. For the first time in nearly 5 years, Chinese President Xi Jinping will pay state visits to three European countries, with France being the first leg of his tour. 2024 marks the 60th anniversary of the establishment of diplomatic relations between China and France. 60 years ago, Chairman Mao Zedong and General Charles de Gaulle made the historic and courageous decision to establish ties, opening the door to exchanges and cooperation between China and the West. But in a world of increasing anti-globalization and right-wing populist forces, can China and France relations maintain that original spirit of bravery and wisdom? How can the two countries strengthen and deepen cooperation in a fractured and destabilizing world? And how far can France go to pursue its strategic autonomy? And what is China's role in this endeavor? Joining me today are Song Xian, founder of Sinvol Think Tank and former policy advisor at the European Parliament, Cui Hongjian, professor with the Academy of Regional and Global Governance at Beijing Foreign Studies University, Arnold Bertrand, French entrepreneur, Mondia Bachari, author and CEO of Mandax, and Philippe Legault, senior fellow at the Asia Society Policy Institute, Center for China Analysis. Well, welcome to this special program. Hongjian, we'll start with you. You know, of course, in January, Chinese President Xi Jinping hailed China and France relations. He said, quote, over the past 60 years, China-France relations have always been at the forefront of China's relations with Western countries, bringing benefits to the two peoples and contributing to world peace, stability, and development. What do you make of President Xi's remarks like this?
I think President Xi pointed out this importance and also value for this bilateral relations between China and France correctly. Also, you know, both China and France, they are major players in the international relations, and both of them are the member of the Security Council of the United Nations. So they take a very, really, I think, important responsibilities to help not only this stability for world and regional situation, and especially they need to do something more to promote this recovery for world economy. And for the past 60 years, we can find that stabilization, it's a very, very important characteristics for these bilateral relations, because for both two countries, they are different in a political system or some other, but indeed, they respect with each other. I think it's a very, very important experience, not only for China and some other countries, especially between China and Western countries. So this kind of strategic importance or value, I think it gives a very, very important condition for both China and France. They can take the, you know, the first group, especially in the relations between major players in the world.
Major players in the world. Mondia, you know, 60 years ago, basically that's a time of Cold War. France basically was part of the, you know, say the Western camp, yes, led by the United States.
Yes.
And China, more or less, you know, were friends of Soviet Union. Of course, there was a division over there. And the two countries, you know, went to each other. People would say that's a move beyond the logic of confrontation between different camps. What do you make of
Correct.
That? You know, 60 years later, when we look back, you know, people would say that's courageous,
Correct.
That's a brave decision.
Yes. Correct. I think to get back to what my colleague has mentioned, it's important to look at things historically speaking and to really understand this kind of like consider one of our Confucius approach, but also somehow traditional French approach to the time, to the long term, right? When we come, when you talk about the different camps, as you just mentioned, when we were referring to a bipolar system, where Soviet Union and the US, it's important that France was trying to carve itself out without falling into the trap of ideologies. And this is why the keywords of pragmatism and a certain, let's say, willingness that was led by Charles de Gaulle was to actually trying to not align, but ally with the US in this way allowing another opportunity for eventually, ultimately, developing somehow a more multilateral approach to how the global arena was and is still trying to get there today.
Mm-hmm. We'll quickly forward to, you know, what we have now, relationship between the two countries. You know, Arnold, how do you characterize the current ties between Beijing and Paris here?
I would characterize it as a ray of hope in a world increasingly divided. France is openly saying it refuses to see a world defined by the US-China rivalry and wants to assert its strategic autonomy. China, on its side, is saying that it doesn't want the rivalry in the first place, and you have effectively both countries putting their money where their mouth is on trying to forge a relationship that's not defined by this US-China rivalry. So in a way, just like France was the first Western country to recognize the PRC in 1964, maybe France today is one of the first Western countries, at least the first major Western country, to recognize the legitimacy of the PRC in a post-unipolar world.
In the post-unilateral world, that's an interesting point. Song-Xin, I also want to have your opinion about, you know, how do you look at the relationship between China and France, you know, against such a large background as, you know, Bernard mentioned earlier?
Well, I still think that there's a big and even like tremendous potential like in this bilateral relationship, not only just in the area of trade, but also in the area of technological cooperation, education exchanges, people-to-people exchanges, and also political level, high-level dialogues at different, you know, at national, regional, and even local level as before. Because I think there are three stable pillars behind the Sino-French relationship. The first is the political, the second is the trade, and third is really the social. And I think all these ties are still very stable, and we should continue to explore the stability and the potentiality of this pillar instead of abandoning them. Mm-hmm. And the second point I want to point out is beyond all this traditional actually cooperation area, today we have also AI, we have also quantum physics, we have also other areas such as not only telecommunication but internet platform, where we can also rebuild this kind of mutual trust in order to boost further this economic and technological cooperation.
Well, Hong Jian, you know, Chinese analysts like to use words like steady and far-reaching, words like this, you know, to describe the relationship between China and France, you know, when it comes to, you know, big events between two countries. So how exactly have these two nations been able to consistently find a consensus, you know, and common ground probably on some specific issues on the global development, for example? And how do you, you know, comment on, let's say, you know, the commonality between the two countries?
Hmm. Also, you know, both China and France, those two countries are, also, you know, has a very long history for a very traditional, culture to support its, the independent policy. Also, you know, self-respect, I think it would be a very, very important feature for both two countries. At the same time, I think not only just at the very beginning, 60 years ago, both two countries realized that they need to take some more responsibilities to support or to, you know, facilitate this called the strategic stability on the global level. I think now we are living a little bit of similar situation now. Now we do face a kind of a challenge between two different forces. One of them perhaps try to draw this world into a so-called new Cold War. And another, I think both China and France, they try to play a more constructive role to help the world and to keep this strategic stability. So I think that on this regard, now how could those two countries to find out a more common ground? I think that to have a similar world view would be very, very important condition for this. For example, now both China and French leaders, they realize that now we are living, perhaps, we are living in a new world order, perhaps in the form of a multipolar world. So how could we find out you know, format to, or even the rule to support this forthcoming multipolar world, which means that multilateralism. So we do find out a very, very strong consensus between two countries on this multilateralism. At the same time, how could we, you know, support this situation is we need to have some economic policy also to support the opening up and also marketing economy and so on. So I think on this regard, especially for this trip by President Xi to France, those two leaders will try to recall this very, very strong voice jointly on, for example, to, you know, keep the strategic stability on a global level and to find out some more political solutions for any kind of geopolitical tensions. And then, of course, on bilateral relations, especially economic and trade issues, they try to find out more constructive solutions and to avoid any kind of tensions like a trade war or something like that.
Let's move on to take a look at, of course, what kind of a role the European Union is going to play around the world. You know, of course, President Macron has been calling for strategic autonomy. Here, you know, we have a clip by the president in the recent speech, you know, talking about the challenges and talking about unity. And he used some very serious words, of course. Let's take a listen.
Nous devons être...
We have to be clear about the fact that our Europe today is mortal. It could die.
Elle peut mourir.
It could die, and that depends solely on our choices.
Bâtir une Europe...
Building a Europe that can show that it is never the vassal of the United States of America and that it also knows how to speak to all regions in the world.
Parler à toutes les régions du monde.
Arnold, I want to have your opinion on, you know, President Macron's remarks. Of course, that's very impressive. He used some strong words, you know, Europe could die. What does he mean?
I listened to that speech and I've listened to Macron many times over the past few years say that he doesn't want to be a vassal of the US and he wants strategic autonomy. And of course, I applaud this rhetoric. I want strategic autonomy for France too. I want, you know, a sovereign France and a sovereign Europe that is able to make decisions based on its own interests.
So, mon dieu, you know. So there is an issue, like probably we need action to match those words.
I think we have to look at it. What is trust here? If we look at it from a local perspective, from a European, let's say, nation perspective, yes, European Union doesn't have war, but it has tensions, if not micro conflicts. That means that the figurehead of the countries often play the homo politicus. So basically, they try to send all the signals in order to, as Macron says, en même temps, which means basically to have to play both a side of your head, but not really having anything, let's say, coherent, right? The example of the Gaza is a great example. But does it mean that we have to categorize what the president of France is? No. I think we have to look at it from a theme perspective. And the theme perspective is that it doesn't matter what people have been feeling, pragmatism, other economic issues is the core reason of any kind of pseudo tensions. Then we kind of like try to put a narrative on top of making France this kind of like developing world, third world advocate in the West. But it is true that in the past few years, there has been a much, under Biden especially, a much more Atlantis American stance. So we go back here. How can we be effective? What and how can we translate those words? Well, we do have to say that we have to compare. So France is the only one in the past few months, in the past year, that has taken that strong approach to try to reinvent a common security defense policy, which has been the European Union goal, but has been failing because of three different stances, whether it's a kind of neutral, I don't know what I'm doing, whether it's a pro-Atlantis stance, which is American stance, or whether it is a much more independent, goalist stance. But we can say that France is trying through Macron for different personal reason to be that flagship. And that is just enough as a signal to see how this is going to attract tension, attract traffic, and see if this can concretize, economically speaking, first. If this concretize in any way, whether it's for China or the developing world, maybe the teeth will start to grow, and therefore, maybe we can see if effectiveness is on the table.
Mm-hmm. Well, Song Xin, you know, if you look at this strategic autonomy, or largely, you know, what they say, mean in a similar direction, This is not the first time the president make such a call. You know, how do you look at this pursuit of strategic autonomy? Autonomy, of course, in terms of defense, we understand that. What about other areas? Also autonomy here?
Right. I think, the Russian-Ukraine conflict actually was a wake-up call for the whole European Union, because in terms of energy security, in terms of energy stability, actually the EU relied on Russia for so many years, from actually the middle of the Cold War even. So right now this reliance just disappeared. It means like the EU and especially countries like Germany, like France, they need to strike to achieve this kind of energy autonomy via other like paths. So that's why they are going through this energy transition, so they can actually start to continue to develop their renewable energy actually spectrum in order to continue to supply the union in a more stable way. Mm-hmm. So this aspect should be also taken into account, which means beyond actually the military autonomy, the energy autonomy. But also there's other aspects such as technology-wise. I mean, right now, if we see like an EU-China relationship becomes somehow the extension of China-US actually competition, it's because the EU has never made its own position like leading position in technology area in a lot of areas such as AI and quantum physics. And these are really like the key area in the future. And if the EU wants to achieve certain like autonomy, let's say technological wise, they need to have a very stable partner. And China should be one of these partners that EU is looking for. So these are the things I think we need to take into account.
Mm-hmm. Well, Hong Jian, you know, from the Chinese perspective, you know, how do you look at this pursuit of a strategic autonomy?
I think to a large degree, to get a kind of a strategic autonomy, now for most of every players in the world should be a goal needed to, you know, pursuit. Now we are talking a lot about so-called the change of international order. What does that mean? Which means that more and more players and economies, they try to find out their own rights to have some more sustainable development. I think on this regard, for both China and France, we can get some more common grounds. I think that this strategic autonomy, not only for France and for China, which means that we need to have our own rights to have our own policies, and we need to have our own, you know, partners. We could not just find out the limitations more and more, just living in a, you know, international order, limited by any kind of unilateral measures or policies by United States. Also, you know that even France, as one of allies with United States, it has suffered a lot, has been suffered a lot from this kind of unilateral behaviors by American government, by United States. So I think now it's time for both China, France, and China, some other European countries, we need to take a very serious rethinking about what's our position, what's our interests, and even what's the common interests between China and Europe, between China, between European countries, and especially for the whole international community.
Mm-hmm. Well, Philip, you know, we are talking about strategic autonomy. We're not talking about probably in a less sense, you know, like, dependence or mutual dependence on each other's market or certain material, for example. Speak of that, you know, if there is a return of Trump to Washington, to the White House, will that somehow probably spur the Europeans to pursue more, let's say, with more interest in terms of autonomy there?
There is no way that, you know, Europe and the United States will completely cut links or things like that. There are just too many, you know, deals going on, business deals on both sides. Actually, there's a lot of European investment in the US as well as American investment, tourism, all of this is happening. But on the other hand, if a Republican president was to suddenly switch courses and perhaps on big issues. We haven't mentioned the Paris Accord on climate, for example, which is something that obviously leaders will be keen to discuss in a few days. And we all know that President Trump, in during his first term, decided to quit that accord which had been signed by his predecessor. So if that was the case, international trade or international governance were to be questioned by Trump, that would obviously raise more than an eyebrow in Europe. It doesn't mean that Europe would necessarily switch to another ally, but it would certainly strengthen perhaps the view of the French president that was re-expressed a few days ago. And I think to a certain extent, Emmanuel Macron's vision has been enhanced by the facts, by the various conflicts we have in the world, including in the Middle East, including in the east of Europe, including in Africa. And Europe needs certainly to mutualize some of its resources, so some of its defense equipments, procurement, this kind of thing. So I think we're going to head towards this. And a number of countries, particularly in Eastern Europe and in Northern Europe, are now much concerned about the risks coming from the outside of Europe, including close to our borders. And this is something that is going to steadily move forward.
Well, outside risks. Arnold, I want to have your opinion here. You know, during the meeting with his visiting, you know, this is the Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi, of course, talked to his French counterpart recently in April. Wang Yi said, the facts, you know, quote, have proven and will continue to prove that China is an opportunity, not a risk to Europe, a partner, not an adversary. End quote. Is this message well received?
At the end of the day, I think that a truly key problem that we have in Europe and in France as well is a big lack of knowledge and understanding of China in Europe. Simply put, Europeans know quite little about China. They don't know China's history. They've never been to China. They've never seen a Chinese movie. Most of them have probably never even spoken with an actual Chinese person. So there is that fear of the unknown, which means that, you know, China can say we're just, you know, a normal country. We don't want to, we want to be a partner, not an adversary. That fear of the unknown is there. So in order to see China in a different light, in a more accurate light, I think it's absolutely critical to work on that, on really develop people-to-people exchange, cultural exchanges, the teaching of the Chinese language, all those efforts to demystify China and to ensure that people in Europe have an understanding of China that reflects reality. And actually, interestingly, I think that's something that China and France are speaking about. For instance, I know that the president of the Figaro Group, which is a big French media conglomerate, was in Beijing a few days ago, and certainly speaking about doing some collaboration with Chinese media in order to, you know, deepen understanding of both countries. So I think efforts to that effect will be, you know, badly needed in order to see China for what it is.
Song Xin, you know, you talked about the huge potential for the two countries in different areas. And on one area, this people-to-people exchange, you know, how much more we need to do probably in your eyes, like to strengthen this relationship? You know, basically, we have talked about this all the time, you know, increase the understanding. Easier said than done.
Yeah, right. I totally agree. I think people-to-people exchange changes actually can be the future key pillar of the bilateral relationship, because based on my own experience. Like 15 years ago, when I was a graduate student, I was admitted by two French elite schools, and it was that year the 14th anniversary of this bilateral relationship, and the French government issued quite some scholarship to help actually Chinese students to finalize their studies and research programs abroad. And I was so lucky that I became one of these people. And then I realized, like, by living and studying in France, I realized, like, how connected actually the two cultures are. Mm. Both of the people, they have really admiration of their own historical heritage, and they have some shared actually habitat, I would like to say, and they also have this kind of admiration for the other countries as well, such as poetry, such as film, such as art. So I think that kind of experience, like among students, among researchers, among the business people, can really be the cornerstone of the future bilateral relationship. And these people can really serve as the, I would say, the buffer zone, like in the future, in order to counterbalance this kind of dropbacks at no matter geopolitical or geo-economical level. So I think that is really key. And what we should do, I think we should restart to invest more in this kind of research program, exchanges program, to invite more French students to come over to work, to study, and to do short-term or long-term this kind of programs, and to just to have fun with the Chinese students. And we also should encourage more Chinese tourists actually to explore France as before. I mean, Paris used to be the most, I think, popular destination for Chinese tourists abroad for long distance, I mean, trip. Right now, of course, after this COVID period, France no longer actually the most popular destination. I think French government should invest more also in trying to promote, like, the French as France as a destination.
As a destination.
Right.
Yeah. That should be the case, probably. Mondia, you know, of course, we are talking about this, you know, strategic autonomy, relationship of people to people exchanges, of course, because, you know, we can sense, you know, the uneasiness or sense of uncertainty, sense of insecurity for different countries, yes. You know, from different parties in today's world. And, you know, people would say this is a new Cold War. So, but globally, you know, European Union, France, you know, China, the United States, the rest of the world, probably we should do more to increase, let's say, you know, exchanges, understanding, you know, of people-to-people contacts.
First of all, going back again and again and again, economy, right? Understanding the interdependence of economy,